Phoebe has put together a very short introduction, but I'm not going to read it. Anyway, Phoebe Reinhart is a best friend of mine, and she sat her first session here at Minnesota Zen Meditation Center in 1978, and that was with Dynan Katagiri. And she was raised Presbyterian and was then very attracted to the Roman Catholic faith and actually its monastic tradition. And I'm going to do this, Phoebe. So she, you have to say, she went from a Pres-Bu Buddhist to a Cat-Bu Catholic Buddhist. We had lots of fun with that because there's Jew-Bus, there are you-you-Bus. Okay. So Ada was attracted to Zazen because it went with the contemplative monastic practice that she found very helpful to her in Catholicism. So in 1973, when she became a Catholic, she still came to Minnesota Zen Center to do retreats. And that continued on, and she went to a Catholic monastery for a year and did most of her Zazen privately, and then moved to Alaska and spent 7 years there, maybe, and came back here to Minnesota Zen Meditation Center every year to do a 5 or 7 day retreat.
Weekend
retreat. A weekend retreat. And after Katagiri died, the wonderful teacher whose name is right here, Shahaku Okamura, came, and we were so grateful, Japanese teacher. And he was so calm and so peaceful that he probably saved Minnesota Zen Center, because it was quite difficult after Katagiri died with 12 Dharma heirs. The balance was difficult to maintain. So Phoebe was very impressed with him and went to study with him after she came back from Alaska. And she was priest ordained by him and Dharma transmitted in 2015. And she has recently retired from 50 years. She's a physical therapist and she offered that service for 50 years. And I think that's where this ends, right? No? More? she is a mother of two sons, and she has two daughter-in-laws, and she has two darling granddaughters. One is 5 and one is 2. 3. When did that happen? Oh, she had a birthday. So her life is, again, full of service and contemplative zazen. Thank you for coming, Phoebe.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Thank you so much. Are the pieces all there?
Thank you. So in your program, could I drop something?
It's good. Just
oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I put the name of my talk as Oneness. The universal truth of the squabbling squashes. And so, first of all, I need to tell you the story of the squabbling squashes. So, you might be familiar with this story, but this little book was written by a student of Shahaku Okamura's. In the country of Japan, there are many Buddhist temples. Some of the Buddhist temples are in cities and are very big, with lots of monks living there. And some are very small, with only a few monks. One of the temples in the country has a big garden behind it. It is the temple where Monk Joshin lives. Here's his garden with lots of squashes. Monk Joshin and all the monks who live in the temple grow vegetables in the garden to make delicious meals. One of Monk Joshin's favorite vegetables is squash. There are many squashes growing in a long line in the garden. The squashes are very happy in the garden because the monks take very good care of them, giving them water and using small holes to take away the weeds. So they grow to be very healthy squashes. One day, the monks hear a lot of noise coming from the garden, and they are alarmed. The squashes are shouting at each other. They are fighting about who is the most beautiful squash and who is the squash that the monks like the most. Well, Monk Joshin comes into the garden to see what all the fuss is about. He says in a loud voice, "Hey, you squashes, you seem to be getting very upset. Let me teach you something that might help." Then he shows them how to become quiet. He says, "Try this. Sit up nice and straight and hold your hands like this. Lower your eyes and try not to look around. There is no need to say anything. Just sit quietly, breathing in and out." The squashes begin to sit like Monk Joshin shows them, and they become less angry, and they stop yelling and squabbling. They become more and more quiet and peaceful. Peaceful squashes. The Monk Joshin says in a quiet voice, "Now, squashes, put your hands on top of your heads." Okay. The squashes put their hands on top of their heads, and when they do, one of them says, "This is very strange. There's something attached to the top of my head." They see there is a vine that connects all of them together. One of the squashes says, "Hey, squashes, we are all tied together. We are all on the same vine." Monk Joshin nods his head. "Yes, you are all connected. You live together on the same vine." The squashes think about this. Then one of them says, "It's true that we are all different squashes. Some are bigger, some are smaller, some are rounder, and some are longer. But even if we are different, we are all connected. We are all growing together on the same vine. We don't have to be squabbling squashes. We can live together in the monk's garden in peaceful connection." And so they did. So this is a children's book, but I'm sure you all could get it. That we are all connected. And if you're not sure about that, just check the top of your head. And you'll find a connection. So, what I want to talk a little bit more about today is that oneness, that interconnection, and how we know that. We are one, but we don't realize it sometimes, even if we believe it. And how do we realize that? I think that partly through a refinement of our intuition and via our spiritual practice, primarily by practicing quiet sitting to enable us to hear what our heart is telling us, just as the pumpkins had to be quiet for a while, to hear something deeper. When we realize this, our eye tends to disappear. I have a couple of examples of that, but before I go on, I wanted to say some other images about this connectedness you might be familiar with. Like, we are like waves on the ocean. The waves are distinct, but you can't separate them from the water. And the same for a river going into the ocean. You can't separate the river from the ocean. Another image that Okumura uses a lot is Indra's net. This is like a fishing net with lots of knots. And each knot is a being, or in some times that intersection is a jewel. And the jewel reflects all the other jewels. So this is like the interconnection of the universe. So the interesting thing too about that image is that if you pull one of those, it moves the whole thing. It affects everything. So, and that is actually the way we function in the universe. But we don't always know that. Well, here it is. And you may have, other people may have experienced this, or athletes, or artists, or dancers. A Japanese Zen practitioner tells the story of his student days when he engaged in intercollegiate fencing matches. When he thought about his strategy, he lost. When he acted intuitively without thinking, he won. He says that in winning bouts, he experienced moments I call the naked expression of enlightenment, in which I acted in response to my direct feeling and deepest mind without considering victory or defeat, opponent or myself, free from illusion or discrimination. It is a matter of training oneself through the principles of Zen to act wholeheartedly in every circumstance, which is another way to talk about oneness, the oneness of this moment, which is the only moment we have. And if we give ourselves wholeheartedly to this moment, we're doing whatever it is wholeheartedly, whether it's washing the dishes or talking to a friend. We're not thinking about the past or planning the future or thinking about what we're going to say. And in these examples, and you may have experienced sometimes this yourself, that you're so engaged in what it is that you sort of disappear, and all there is this that is one thing. The world is one interdependent whole, and each of us is that one whole. So this is kind of like a paradox, and Zen has a lot of paradoxes. And I think part of the way that we understand those is not with our conceptual ideas. If we try to understand them, we will say, well, that doesn't make any sense. That's even nonsensical. But sometimes we have a sense that there's something there that's true, and we recognize it on a deeper level. Now, I'm calling it intuition. I don't know what we would call it, but that's what I'm calling it. With practice, that intuition gets more refined. And I'm not just talking about practice on the cushion, but this full-hearted oneness with each moment. We can be practicing, we are practicing all the time. And in that, we become more aware, more sensitive. And a friend recently gave me an interesting image that some people seem to have an antenna that is more receptive to the Dharma. And this can also, I think, develop with practice, that you become more sensitive for you, and you begin to hear and see the Dharma more clearly, more deeply. You're more receptive. Uh, So a couple of thoughts about just intuition versus conceptual thinking. Our common way of thinking about most things is conceptual, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's how we function in the world. But there are other kinds of knowing. So anyway, so for example, there are three common understandings of knowing. One is conceptual, one is experiential, and scientific. Now, experiential is important in that part of what I'm talking about is we are learning the truth of reality partly through our own experience and the verification of our own experience. We're not asked to believe something, but with our experience, we deepen our understanding and knowledge and our oneness, our awareness of oneness. So it becomes more acute. And so it's not just something I believe or I think this is right, or it's something I actually experience, I actually know. So the mystics, let me say a little bit about mystics. I think mystics, their most religious traditions have some mystics in practitioners, and you may have heard this saying that theologians will argue but mystics speak the same language. And theologians will argue, but mystics speak the same language. So I'm just going to say a little bit about mystics. I have a little definition here. So, to be a mystic is to experience absolute reality or absolute being. The reality is absolute. It's not relative. Not being relative, it cannot have form, for all forms are relative to each other. Thus, it is infinite. Being infinite or formless, absolute being will be experienced as transcending space and time, as well as all possible categories. I mean, categories? Categories. Of the understanding. Anyway, thus it is invisible, eternal, inconceivable, and unspeakable, which is why we can't grasp it with our conceptual minds and we can't express it with our language. It cannot be known either by the senses or the mind, for both of these modes of conscious experience involve form, either material or conceptual. A mystic would rely on experience, not belief, for verification of reality, as we do in Buddhism and as Dogen recommends. In order to be receptive and cultivate this intuition, we need to practice opening up and listening to our hearts. Initially, we may come to spiritual practice because we experience some existential longing. And at first, we may trust that a particular path may satisfy this longing. In this case, maybe Zen. But after some experience, one doesn't just believe such things, but knows them from experience. The most important truth to know is that we are one. If we know this, we cannot help but love one another. And I wanted to say a couple of other things about oneness. First of all, I was told by the Zen Grapevine that toward the end of his life, the category emphasized this with his students. If you teach anything, teach oneness. And also, when the Buddha was enlightened, he said, I can't find it, but it's something like, I awakened with all beings, which implies that there is no space and time limitation on this. And he didn't just say, I awakened with all beings. No, that sounds ridiculous. I mean, like, it's not possible to conceive of what this means. And we try to understand what it means, we don't. But we might have a little, it might ring a bell or touch something that seems authentic. And we sort of respond to that. We say, oh, yeah, I can't really tell you why that is true, but I know it's true. And so Buddhism is not usually thought of as a mystical religion, but I think that with the definition that I use, that I think it fits. And whether it does or not, my point is that this oneness is not just known by Buddhists. It can be known by anyone and has been by many, and particularly mystics in other traditions. So I use these two books as references for my talk. And this one, The Way of Selflessness by Joel Warwood, talks about the way of selflessness, which leads to enlightenment in many traditions. So he talks about Hindu, Buddhist, Islam, Jewish religion, and he gives examples, and also examples of what various people in those traditions have said about their awakening. And then this one, Learn from the East, Beatrice Bruto. This is, I think, intended primarily for Christians to understand us in the East. But it has some very good things in it, one of which I read to you. And so if you're interested, regarding practice, I'd like to say a few things about thinking and non-thinking. You know, Dogen talks about not thinking, what is not thinking, what is non-thinking, what it. And when we do our meditation practice, one way to put it is the name of one of Tripura's books, which is called Opening the Hand of Thought. It's like letting go of thought. That's one way to look at it. But sometimes we have the expectation that there aren't going to be thoughts, that we should get rid of them. And that takes some energy and will, like we're working to try to get rid of them. And actually, the thoughts are going to come and go because our brains are working, and that's a neurological function, and it doesn't stop just because we sit down. And we don't need to expect it to stop. What we need is to just let it be. So, and another way to think about this is sometimes we feel guilty because, oh, there I go, I'm thinking again. And actually, maybe I'm not thinking. Maybe my brain is just thinking. And maybe I'm not thinking until I actually engage in that. And that's what we're trying to let go of. Let the feelings come and go. You don't need to stay there. You don't need to follow them. But don't get upset about it. Just, it's part of our normal function. Another way to think about thinking is sort of passive or intentional thinking. Like, of course, we think, like when I tried to prepare this talk, I did some thinking and I did some studying, and we study and we think. We have to think about lots of things. And that's very intentional. We have an intentional reason or purpose for thinking. But then there's sort of the passive thinking that's there all the time. And I'm not necessarily the author of it. It just is there because I have a brain. And we don't need to get upset about that. I mean, it's just the way it is. And the more we can let go of being concerned about that, the more we can penetrate into a deeper level of understanding. So now I have some kind of miscellaneous notes that are related, but not in any kind of sequence. I wanted to say something about God. Oh, I have another story to tell, too. I forgot. This is important. There is a story, you may have heard it, about a journalist was in South Africa, and he was talking to some children, and he told the children that he set out a big basket of treats over there, and he said they should race to this, and whoever got there first would get it, which is like a very Western kind of idea. Like the thing we hit at birthdays.
Yeah.
Pinata. Anyway, so what the children did is they joined hands and they all went together and sat down and shared what was in the basket. And he asked, you know, what was it that resulted in this activity or this way of reacting? And he was told that this is in an African word called Ubuntu. And actually, other people have talked about this too, Desmond Tutu in his conversations with the Dalai Lama and others. So this is, they call this value Ubuntu. And this has various translations. Humanity towards others. I am because of who we all are. I am because we are. I am because you are. And because you are, definitely, I am. So I think my favorite here is I am because you are. And my existence depends on you. And I thought this was very interesting that these children were brought up with this understanding and this value of selflessness and cooperation and harmony, not competitiveness. And their understanding of it is because you are not separate from me. So how can I compete with you or exclude you or denigrate you or take from you? Because we are one. And these little kids understood that. Some of the virtues this promoted in their community were patience, hospitality, loyalty, respect, sociability, endurance, sympathy. And they had practices, like if a stranger comes to town, people take care of them automatically, feed them, house them. It's about interconnectedness. And in our tradition, this is also explained, one word is oneness. I am you and you are me. So is this a belief, a theory, or a reality that we can actually know from experience? Oh, here it is. Buddha's first words after enlightenment. I, together with all living beings, attain the way. And so he didn't do this by himself, nor do we. Our practice is not for us, it's for everyone. And what is it that Buddha realized? Maybe that we are one, although it might have been explained in much more complicated language and many words. That's sort of the bottom line. So this is a profound statement and initially seems irrational, like many others, like when you help one person, you help everyone. Now, does that make any conceptual sense? But somehow we recognize the truth in that. And I'd say one way to understand that, how that's happening, is via our intuition, which is not a conceptual understanding, but it is a real knowing, and it is a really possible to know that way. So a rational person might dismiss the statements as impossible. However, oh, I already said that there are some who are touched by something that feels true, although not rationally or conceptually explained. These people, as I said, seem to have an antenna for hearing, accepting, and maintaining the Dharma. This antenna and the refinement of intuition happens with practice. We practice accessing a deeper level of reality than just our intellectual conceptual understanding. And now I'm going to check to see if I missed anything I want to say. And then I'm going to end with a blessing. And when you hear this, I would like you to suspend your conceptual thinking and just before you start thinking about it, judging, or whether it's possible or what it means, just try to receive it and see how it feels. So somewhere in here, someone said something about the formless absolute, and that can also be a word used for God, or God used for that. The problem with the word God is we make that an object outside of ourselves, and that's the whole problem with that language. But just because we have that problem with that language doesn't mean it's not a matter of believing whether there's a God or not. It's kind of understanding what God is for the, and maybe in some of these definitions, to me, it's like God is Buddha nature. You know, this truth does not belong to just us. It belongs to everyone, and everyone has access to it, even those who speak of it in terms of God. An Indian teacher, Swami Vivekananda, said, "If God is real, then God can be realized." And some would say God is not to be believed in, God is to be known. Now, if I can find my blessing, I will be able to bless you. Oh, here's a couple more notes. Zen refers to seeing into and discerning the truth of the way things are, and then harmonizing the mind to properly correspond to this understanding. Our suffering is because we set our wills against the fact of reality. I think that was interesting way of saying it. We want things to be different than they are. Some other words that were used for enlightenment in these books were, well, you've probably heard these, realization, awakening, gnosis, or knowledge. And an interesting one was recognition. It's like, this is kind of like awakening, like recognizing the truth of reality. And regarding enlightenment, I said, enlightenment is for others. We have nothing to gain with our practice. It is not a means to an end. It is a way to realize, manifest, and embody awakening. As Dogen says, practice and enlightenment are one. And Shohaku Okumura and his teachers say, Zazen is good for nothing. Which doesn't mean it doesn't have any results. It means that it doesn't have a goal. Particularly a goal that is like to get something from myself. So I'm ready to bestow on you this blessing. So be ready to receive it. I call upon all the angels and saints, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of past, present, and future to bless you as much as they can and more than they can. Any comments?
Thanks so much, Adriel. Maybe just some great memories. Just love your presence. Thank you so much.
I love
you. I really love appreciate your referring several times to the Buddha's awakening statement, I, together with all the because that was his expression of a profound experience that he had had. And I think to be reminded that the whole structure of Buddhism emerges from that original statement.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many words in Buddhism. Now, it's so complicated, and we study so much theological type, Buddhological, incredible. Sometimes you think that your job is to understand all of that intellectually. But what we were talking about today is a reminder that it all goes back to some kind of fundamental experience. And that you can really truly only understand Buddhism through your own direct experiences of something that's full of a through your life. I felt that when you were talking today, and that's such a valuable thing to be reminded of.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be invited to be here.
I'm really happy that we talked about intuition. I don't think we talked about that live and heard it in the last year. And I believe that it's a very important part of our relationship to ourselves and our relationship to the world and to being. It's our intuition is trusting ourselves and that relationship in order to allow that knowing to come through. And I think that we don't trust ourselves that way. Something that I think we can bring to Fathom as well is that kind of inner listening. And that's what I think the intuition is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So we've heard this statement, Zazen is good for nothing, a few times throughout here. My question is, I'll say what I think the answer is. Zazen is good for nothing, but practice is good for everything. That was kind of what I would say, that I think it'd be a little too easy to take Zazen as good for nothing and not want to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, remember too that nothing is everything.
Hi. So you were talking about people being having some sensitivity and receptivity to the Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
I'm vaguely remembering reading someplace about the big advantages and disadvantages for that. And some advantages to people that aren't naturally, that they, and I read someplace, sometime, sort of some cautions in both directions. Do you have any comments about
it? No, do you? Well, but say more.
Well, I think it's important for people not to be discouraged.
Oh.
If there's an effort.
Yeah, why might the effort for nothing, right? But I think that our experience verifies that something's happening. Even though we're not doing it to get something, our experience verifies that this feels right. And that too is like it's not a conceptual understanding, but it's like recognizing sort of the truth. Anyone else?
So you mentioned the metaphor of music for oneness. And I really, that's my favorite metaphor for oneness, because you're not just a piece of it. You are creating something new by being a part of it. And you are also having to be receptive to everyone else and adjust to them at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think I did say that, but that's that makes sense. Yes.
Would you say the blessing one more time?
Oh, yes.
If you...
No, I actually know. And by the way, this blessing was originally, it's a paraphrase of a blessing by St. Clair. And I was, the monastery I was in for a year was the monastery of St. Clair. She is the contemplative partner of St. Francis. And her blessing did not include Buddhists and Bodhisattvas. But anyway, but mine is, I call upon all the angels and saints, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, past, present, and future, to bless you as much as they can, and more than they can.
When you're talking about oneness, and I love the metaphor of the squashes in the garden, and you recommend, you know, checking the top of your head. I wonder if you have, when I'm sitting in Zazen, one thing that I experience often is like the limits of my own perception. You know, I can hear what's happening around me. I can feel things. And sometimes if I'm in a really kind of calm state, I can notice, there's just a feeling here. And if I were, you know, walking around in my daily life, I would say that's my foot feeling the floor. Mm-hmm. But when I'm sitting, like, oh, it's just a feeling. And the word foot and floor are things that I apply to it. But beyond that, I wonder if you have any recommendations for how I can experience. I can understand intellectually how I'm connected to everything, but how can I experience that? Like with my body.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I have the answer to that, except that, again, I think it's kind of a intuitive thing that we kind of get glimpses of, and that our body, our practice reinforces that, not just our Zazen, but this oneness with every moment. And we also can nurture it by practicing it. In other words, it's okay to start with an idea. And that idea is that you and I are one, and I actually have that idea. Well, that idea can eventually manifest itself more deeply if I practice that with you. In other words, I trust that we are one. Therefore, that affects how I respond to you, how I treat you, how I talk to you, or how I approach the cashier at the market, how I approach every moment. And in doing that, we are also kind of like reinforcing that experience of oneness by actually doing it, doing oneness. Does that help? I don't have most answers, but that's my understanding. Anyone else? Thank you for listening.